Glad you brought the music, because yeah, that is something that like famously can be a bit divisive for some people.
Yeah.
I mean, I must admit, I was a time when I'd only seen this once, and I kind of had that memory of like, yeah, I remember the soundtrack being a bit out of place. And you go back and rewatch it, and you're like, nah, this fits. Actually, yeah. this is just fun. Like you said, it just underscores absolutely. You're right, the rock star element of it, the fact that it is kind of big and bombastic and ridiculous to do something as like charging at another human being on a horse yeah. with a stick. It's like, that is wild, you know, and it is exciting. And it is, like you said, that sports movie element of it, of like, yeah, you need like a punchy soundtrack. You need something yeah. that gets you
builds
in that
the hype,
space. And,
you know,
totally. Yeah, yeah. Like a classical score would feel quite out of place, I think, actually. And it would feel a bit like, oh, you're trying to take this too seriously. Or yeah. I don't know, just tonally, it would be a bit off.
Hits it right out of the gate too, you know. First scene that we yeah. see, it's We Will Rock You from Queen. You're seeing, you know, you're in there and you think, okay, I'm buying my ticket to see A Knight's Tale, please. All right, you sit down and then you hear We Will Rock You and you're just looking around like, are we in the right place? Are we in the right movie?
Yeah, yeah.
I know, they're jousting. Okay, what is this now? Like, it just sort of builds that curiosity straight from the get-go. And Jim, through my research for my episode of the podcast on this, they actually said that Hedgeland kept getting interviewed about the musical choices that he made throughout this movie and the selections that he made. And every single person asked him, you know, are you worried about the risky choice of the soundtrack that you've put in there? And every interview he'd say, no, no, no. And then one of the last ones, he actually went on and said, you know, I wasn't actually scared or worried about the musical choices until every single one of you started asking me about it. It just felt like a no-brainer to me. It was something that I just sort of creatively wanted to do. But then now that everybody's asking me about it, I was like, was that the right move? Anachronism is what it's called, you know, that time period apart. Mm. Famously done in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right, yeah.
And
yeah.
That's where I remember it most from, is Guardians of the Galaxy. Mm. And when I saw them doing that in a reverse way, obviously past music and futuristic setting, I thought, you know what does that to A Knight's Tale? And then I look back at it, and it's probably one of the first movies to do something like that on such a scale in 2001.
True.
Yeah, and I think that really just sort of sets the tone apart. It really, because imagine going up against Lord of the Rings. You're making a jousting movie and you're releasing it the same year as Lord of the Rings. You're like, what are we going to do here? Because, I think the source material for A Knight's Tale, have you've heard of the Canterbury Tales?
I have, yes.
From Geoffrey Chaucer, yeah. And also very heavily influenced by, I'm not sure which one of these came first, but A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms from George R.R. Martin. It's a series that's coming out. But he actually wrote a book called A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. And the story basically follows this. It's a knight's tale through and through. Mm-hmm. A guy that is lowborn goes and tries to practice in tournaments to become higher up. And that's how I came about revisiting this movie as well, is because I was looking at that sort of media as well. So it had the opportunity to go into a more serious kind of tone for A Knight's Tale, but the director definitely had that vision that you were talking about before, where he wanted it to be this certain type of movie, and he went there.
Yeah, which is, I think, is totally fine, and it's a thing of interpretation, right? Of like, I think that's what's really cool about any artistic endeavor, is you can take source material, as you say, or take inspiration from something and then go and make it your own. And I don't know about you, I'm like, I'm quite interested in that more so these days, especially as things get more and more contenty, shall we say, where it's not quite a director's vision.
It's a formula.
It's just, it's a formula. We've got to get something out, blah, 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 all that stuff. So it's nice to see something like this where it's just like a guy, read a couple of books and thought, there's a story in here and I want to do this, make it a sports movie, make it a rock star movie, and just, you know, and it's kind of like, again, you're like, yeah, tonally, that makes a lot of sense. That's it's different as well. That's the other thing, is it stands out. As you say, nearest comparison at that time of year, as you said, is, Lord of the Rings, which is a high fantasy epic with an incredible score. So obviously you wouldn't have known that at the time making it, but it's like, it's, if anything, it's really fortunate that he didn't go down the route of, I'm going to hire an orchestra and try and make it grand and serious, or, you know, it just would have been a bit like, oh no, he would have been in the shadow of something else.
I think it would have been completely forgettable as well. You know, it would have been a movie you watched in 2001 and then that would have been the last time you saw it. But because it was so different at the time and it stood out for a lot of different reasons, and obviously, as we talked about before, that connection through the cast of characters, that's what made it memorable throughout the years. But it's also so good to see, just from the spark notes that the director was taking when he was researching, like looking for ideas for a screenplay, ideas for a movie. And he looked at jousting, he's like, I want to make a jousting movie. Okay, cool. Looks at all the different sort of information. And then one line sort of stood out to him where he researched and read, a jousting knight has to be noble-born. And he was like, there it is. That's the movie. You know, that was, and that's crazy how that one thing can just sort of tick inspiration. And, you know, being a creator yourself, you'd know like where your ideas come from sort of fascinates me as well, or where you get inspiration to do things or jump on a certain idea or topic.
Totally. Yeah. Absolutely. And yeah, again, I'm going to bring up music, people. I did like a song. I know it's just my go-to, but I also did an independent filmmaker season, so I'll lean on that as well. But yeah, doing seasons this year that focused on people creating stuff, and I will be doing more of those. I'm with you. It totally fascinates me about how inspirational sparks can just come from, like you said, like a line in a book, or you hear a certain sound, or somebody says a phrase. It's just anything that can make you suddenly go, wait, what was that? Say that again. And then suddenly you're just off. But that's what's awesome, I think, about particularly movie making, if it's done well, is the whole point is it's telling a story. So when somebody comes in with a vision like that and they have an idea of what they want to tell, I'm always here for him. I was like, yeah, let's see what you're going to do with it. And it's definitely a great example of that for sure, man. And again, as we said, the thing that really makes it come together is having that collaboration. It's having those people that buy into the journey or the idea with you, you know. And it's very clear, as we've said, from watching this and looking at the cast, that they were all on board with it, right? They all understood that's the story they were telling. Let's get behind it, which I think I'm going to use as a segue to talk about some of the cast as well, because, I mean, the chemistry, as you mentioned before, the camaraderie is awesome. I got to admit, yeah, I think this would have been the first time I would have seen people like Paul Bettany and Alan Tudyk outside of TV doing a film role. And these guys get some awesome stuff to do. I mean, Paul Bettany has, I would argue, one of the most memorable introductions of a character I've ever seen on screen.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Hedgeland actually wrote the role of Geoffrey Chaucer for Paul Bettany.
Really?
Because, yeah. Okay. Yeah, and because he was such a new director, the studio wasn't really sort of sold on Paul Bettany. There were two actors that they wanted him to use. One was Drew Carey, and the other one I've forgotten. I'm not sure which one it is, but it was, that was a different character. No, yeah, there was two actors, but I'm not sure which was the second. But Drew Carey was in contention for it. And Hedgeland was like, no, I want Paul to do it. And the studio was just like, you know what? You don't have any – well, this is his words. He said he didn't have a back catalogue of movies that they could look at and go, no, here's where you've made all these mistakes before. So they were just like, okay, go ahead and do it. But definitely great casting and also an amazing role. You know, he also ad-libbed some of the speeches that he did, and they'd be delivered in various different manners.
Right.
And they'd pick the ones that they've liked. Obviously, they scripted some that they needed to. But that performance that he does, just the intonation of the voice, the emotional resonance when it was required as well, almost comes off as like a boxing announcer at times as well. He's just, he played the crap out of that role. And I also saw that he was interviewed about it, about the role and being naked on screen for the first few minutes of his film career, basically. And he said, you know, if you can get people to like you on screen when you're naked, they're going to like you doing anything.
True.
He took it away. I loved it. He's such a good character. Not only in this movie, but also just full stop, just a great character.
He totally is. And what's interesting, if you hop on his IMDb, which reminds me, IMDb jingle.
What do I know? What do I know? He hasn't won an Oscar. I knew there was a straight DVD sequel. Nicolas Cage is in. How many seasons were there?
Ladies and gentlemen, it It's time to IMDb.
When you look at that, there's a retrospective on there, and obviously it's got all the clips from his various film roles, and the first one that comes up is him doing the speech in A Knight's Tale. Like, it's the first thing that comes up because it is a memorable entrance. And,
yeah,
you know, I mean, we spoke about, obviously, Heath Ledger's incredible charisma that he had to carry the film. I would argue that the next person who needs to follow that up is Paul Bettany's character, because he is literally a hype man. His whole thing is building up this legend and helping him. So you need someone who is also charismatic and can hold your attention as a speaker and rally you up and get you to buy into it. And it's a funny thing, I think, where it's like he's selling it to the people in the crowd as much as he is to the audience watching.
Yeah.
Right. And it's so that performance really has to pop out of the screen and grab you as a viewer. And he does it perfectly. Like, he just absolutely, like you said, the intonations, the way he does it, like a boxing announcer, it just pulls you in. And it's like, yeah, I absolutely, yeah, let's go. And it gets you riled up, and like, fair play to him to just absolutely nail that and knock it out of the park. It's brilliant.
I love looking at his character as a sort of, like, in retrospect as well, as an allegory for this actual film. Because if you look at the previous announcers that, say, Count Adhemar or somebody had, they did it very formally. They did it very regally.
Yes.
They had a very much a sort of pattern to the way that they did it. And I see that guy as fantasy medieval movies before A Knight's Tale. And I see Geoffrey Chaucer or Paul Bettany as A Knight's Tale. Like, he's doing it a little bit different, and it's responding to the rest of the crowd, that everybody's sort of looking at it a little bit differently, and seeing sort of Heath Ledger or William or Ulrich von Lichtenstein's entry. And then it intrigues you onto his character because he's done it so differently from before. But yeah, I do love the way that Bettany just nuances his way into perfection here. And going back to what you said about that charisma, he's definitely charismatic, same as William is, Heath Ledger's character. But he is that sort of arrogant kind of charismatic, but he's doing it from like a salesman sort of perspective. And then again, he comes back to that. You can see the duality of him because he also has so much heart. And that's shown in the scene where he's obviously got a gambling problem. And as soon as his friends fix his gambling problem for him, he literally dives headfirst into that friendship and does anything he can for that group of people. Like, he found his people, he found his family, he found the people that are going to stand up for him, because obviously no one else has. And that's the moment that made me go, I like that character. Just that he paid it back in turn. He would do anything for William. His words are his tool, his weapon, if you will. Again, shown in the scene where William's in the stocks at the end of the movie. Every single character walks in with some kind of weapon, you know, with the stick from Watt, Alan Tudyk's character, or Mark Addy with his fists. But he comes in and he just says to the whole crowd, you know, listen to me, listen to me. He wants to use his words to help, because that's his tool. But yeah, I just hit the character of William Chaucer is great in this movie, but also in fiction. Awesome.
Yeah. Absolutely. And yeah, again, the sort of dynamic that he has with them. And I love his sort of back and forth with Alan Tudyk's Watt.
Yeah.
And I just think of the scene where he goes, I think Watt goes to jump over the banister to help out William, and he just runs up and shoves him off.
Yeah. That's
beautiful. They have that kind of young brothers.
Well done. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a brotherly kind of rivalry.
Yep.
Older where they just like to wind each other up. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And then the returning line of, you know, maybe not you. When he says that kind of thing. Yeah, I love that. I see those two characters as opposites, because Geoffrey is very considered and careful with the words that he uses to try and persuade an audience. But Tudyk's character of Watt is very impulsive and will just say things, and it gets them in trouble a lot of the time. So that duality is interesting to watch too, and the fact that they connect because of that. And it's that thing, opposites attract, you know. It's a good pairing.